You really need to understand who is willing to pay for it, who is going to lose money because of it. There's a lot of forces in this field, but I find it fascinating. I find it fascinating to work through these complicated workflows and able to make a huge impact on people's lives.
Welcome to 20 Minute Leaders. Just sit back, relax, and learn from the leaders of today. It's a journey. Each one is different, unique, inspiring. Let's get started.
20 Minute Leaders is a proud supporter of Make-A-Wish Israel and Tech to Peace, and is in proud collaboration with Secret Chord Ventures, J Ventures, Riverside FM, Fusion VC, Birthright Excel, J Impact, Leap, Google for Startups, and Hippo,
and in media partnership with CTech. Yael Adam, welcome to 20 Minute Leaders. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Very honored to have you as part of the series. You know, this is all about leadership, entrepreneurship, and looking at new, at old problems in new light. You're tackling one of the most, I think, fascinating problems that we face, a very deeply personal problem to many, many people around the world. An extraordinarily interesting problem in terms of both the scale and the human behavior associated with it. I remember, you know, meeting you and Yoni just about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and I was fascinated and you know, taken aback by the magnitude and the humanity behind the problem here and how you're tackling it. And so I'm really excited to both dive into the problem space and as well as the solution, but also your own journey as an athlete, as a technologist, as a leader, as an entrepreneur. So a lot for us to unpack in 19 short minutes. So we're going to just jump right into it. Yael, tell me a little bit about this world of Laguna Health. You know, what is this problem that we're in?
So Laguna Health is a conversational care intelligence. What it means is that today we have care managers, payers, and anybody that care for patients as they're going through recovery from hospitalization and other chronic conditions, have a care manager give them a call by the payer in order to reduce costs and make them healthier. Today, these calls are very strict with a set of questions that the care manager asks and the patients answer. And they're not paying attention to what is said on the call. There's a lot to be identified as the people are calling and discussing, a lot of insight to be uncovered, and then offering actionable action that the care manager can take with the patient to make them better. So an example would be that a patient can get out of a hospitalization and goes home with a set of papers. In these papers, there's all these things he needs to do or she needs to do. The reality is they can understand some of them. They might be scared of some of them, or might financially not be able to afford medication, doctors, transportation, and others. And in a conversation they have with the care manager, we'll try to reveal those barriers and then have a plan of care on how to take care of them in order to have the patient recover in the best manner. So in general, I feel like there's a lot, and that's kind of like something that I took with me for the last 15 years. There's a lot that goes into medicine. People go through, get the best care, the most complicated surgeries, a lot of advancement. They get medication, cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then they go home into this vacuum where nothing happens there. It still stayed the same as it did 20, 30 years ago. Maybe 40 years ago, somebody would come to your house as the doctor used to come to people's home, and there was more connection. Community work with physicians and clinicians was much tighter. Today, it's even worse. You get discharged to your home into nothing. And a lot of things breaks there. So you got the most complicated surgery or transplant, whatever it is, and that breaks in the fact that you can't make it to your doctor. You're not doing your cardiac rehabilitation. You're not buying medication. That's such a low-hanging fruit in getting people to be better overall. So I've been really focused on that surrounding medicine that really affects people's health for the past 15 years.
But I'm curious, you know, it sounds like such a fundamentally critical part of, you know, the personal experience. I mean, they are saying, I remember where I read that I was speaking to somebody in the software in space for surgeries and for hospitalization, and they said a sentence that I really thought was thought-provoking. You know, this, the day you're going to surgery or you're in the hospital is one of the most important days of your life. quite literally, right? I mean, it's the day your life potentially is at risk. Now, what we're talking about here is effectively, you know, the most fundamental things that you need to do to make sure that you yourself rehabilitate and get back to health. What are the main gaps that are forming here that make this such a ubiquitous problem?
Yeah, so I think that some people have a hard time understanding why would people not take medications or right. not what they're supposed to. Like, it sounds mind-blowing. So my husband is a pediatric oncologist. He does bone marrow transplant to patients. So they take months to get in place. You have to get a donor. You need to get very expensive medication. It's a big thing. And they go home and they don't take the medication. And it blows my mind. I'm like, I know my husband works really hard to get these patients to be in the best possible state. And they go home and don't take the meds or don't come back for follow-up or whatever that is. I have all this criticism. He's like, why are you criticizing? They don't have the ability. The mother that was supposed to buy the medication has 7 other kids to take care of so that she has competing priorities. We know that in the U.S., the number one predictor for readmission is living alone. But there's all these things that you can easily overcome. So you don't move in with a person that lives alone, but you'd help them identify who is in the circle of care. Please let me know who do you think you can call when you need something, because you will need something in the next 30 days.
Sure.
Once we identify, like, do you know how to request help? Are you feeling comfortable requesting help? We start revealing those really deep relationships. We have somebody that said, I have no one. I'm like, well, who picked you up from the hospital? Well, my neighbor. She's been my neighbor for 50 years. I'm like, okay, that's a meaningful relationship. Let's make sure that you can call her if you need to get sent back to the hospital. We had a patient that had sepsis. We're able to identify it very early on. And because he already identified that circle of care, like, well, which one of those 3 people you identify is going to take you to the hospital now? And by getting them back to the hospital within a few hours, we got antibiotics and they were good to go. If you would have come to the hospital 72 hours later, that means ICU stay, that means kidney damage. Yeah. There's a really bad, the new normal after this kind of event is not good. So
what is Laguna Health to the patient if you're thinking about the relationship you're forming with them and the value that it provides on a very fundamental level? How should patients be thinking about your product and your company in the context of their own life and their journey of getting to health?
So Laguna has 2 main solutions, 2 main parts of it. One is for the care manager. So the patient, the care manager from the payer, from the health system that is calling the patient, yeah. And a patient app if they choose to download it and if the payer itself choose to give it to the member. So there's these 2 ways to be working with Laguna. Underneath all of it, there's all the magic, all the engine that is running and out calls in real time and giving insight. So care managers today is dealing with a lot. They have a lot on their plate. They need to have a big panel of patients they care for. They have to make a lot of calls. They make measure. There's a lot of things on their plate. And they need to also really pay attention for the conversation. So a patient might say, a care manager might call a patient and say, the care manager will ask, have you bought your medication? I bought medication. Copays are expensive. You know, I got them and then I went to get some ice cream. And they go in with a conversation. But they said something really critical. They said the copays were expensive. Is this a problem? It might or might not be, but there is a clue here that would need to be probed. We need to understand if there is a bigger issue here with payment. A patient might say, of course I'm taking medication. I don't want to die. Okay, there might be an anxiety here. We need to tap into this anxiety, and the care manager needs to know what to do with this kind of statement. How do you take it to the next step, and what is it that you want to do about it? So we are, on the one hand, the patient might might not know about Laguna, because Laguna might be care manager facing only, and the care manager get kind of your mobile eye in the car, telling you when you're too close, giving you hints, your co-pilot along the way, hints and insight into what, actionable insight, what is it you need to do about it? The patient might have the app and we have a chat called Lisa, which is an automatic responses to everything they might have, and it kind of sees the patient holistically from the data we get from the hospital, from the payer, and able to analysis what is the risk, what are the big risk factors for this patient, and able to probe specifically on them.
So being at that intersection between the caretaker and the patient, obviously that's a very interesting place to be positioned in terms of data, in terms of experience, in terms of product. You know, we're in the beginning of 2024. We've been living through what now is ubiquitously called the AI revolution. Of course, we understand that, you know, the infrastructure of deep learning models, in particular LLMs, which I'm sure are quite significant here, they've been in rapid development over the past several years. I'm constantly astounded by what's happening, and I got to experience MedPalm and some of these large models from my own home. But how do you, as a technologist now, how do you see opportunities unlocking for Laguna and for the space as a result of the global rise in the capacity of LLMs these years?
Yeah, could it be a better timing for us with this AI revolution?
Yep.
The way the company started, if we look at it, is we started making calls with people after hospitalization. That's where we penetrated the market for these high cost claims, for these people that need support. In this conversation, we start touching things that are not only biological. So we'll take a step back. A person is built out of these three segments: biological, psychological, and socioeconomical. There's also a contextual layer that kind of goes along with all these. Most calls today in most payers' health system relationship is the biological aspect of the patient. About 15 years ago, they started talking about the psychological aspect of the patient, and recently they started looking at the social determinants of health. What is the socioeconomic status of the patient? How does that affect their well-being? In our call, we make sure we touch all of the human. We're not talking only on the biological aspects. We're able to collect a lot of calls, like we have thousands and hours of calls, where we have knowledge about what people are dealing with and what they had to overcome and what the outcome was. So we have a lot of data to start working on and build our model on top. So we're taking everything we can from the world development of generative AI, obviously, but we train it on our system, our data itself, which will give us this competitive advantage in addition to clinical model, in addition to understanding risk stratification better. Because if the number one prediction of readmission is not biological, is not the diagnosis, but it's living alone,
yeah,
then how can I start understanding what is living, is all living alone the same? People can be in a relationship, if they have a full house, and be very lonely. What kind of risk, and how do we identify these lonely people, and how does that affect their recovery? How do we know that if a bus stop is more than 5 blocks away from a patient's home and they don't have a car, their probability of getting to an appointment just dropped significantly. All these things can be taken into account when you start looking at people's recovery and people's taking care of themselves. The medicine is the same, but the people's situation, just my home and your home, are not the same. They're very different. We have very different challenges.
Yeah. And I can imagine that what's really unique here is that you're uniquely positioned as a product company that, you know, that's very user facing during this AI revolution. So while there's a lot of the backbone infrastructure that's being built, you have the opportunity to now bring this to the world and make it accessible to the users. And so I can only imagine that, you know, everybody probably agrees that, you know, 5-10 years from now, the patient experience and the caretaker's experience or care manager's experience is going to be dramatically different as a result of these technologies. And you're in a very unique position to be that jumping stone for them, right?
Yes. And we started with clinical trials. So we've been doing it in the academic route of making sure that it worked before we built it, before we built a scale. And send it. So we did a couple of large clinical trials with North Shore Hospital System and Mayo Clinic. So big, respectable hospital systems in the U.S. We publish articles in the American College of Cardiology. We show that we can reduce readmission by 35% and reduce cost 50% with the very low interventions. If you think the other way to, like, I can give more medication that costs thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And in the end of the day, you need to make sure that the patient can come to your appointment. I really feel like something that is such a taken for granted, but really not working.
100%. Okay, so tell me a little bit about yourself. How has this space come together with your own background? And take me all the way back to you as an athlete, you as a technologist. How are all these things coming together to Laguna Health?
Yeah, so I've been an athlete for many, many years and suffered through many, many injuries. Had been 3 knee surgeries, all in the same knee. So I'm trying to be consistent on that. And I had some pretty rough recoveries on that. I think there's a lot of, they talk about musculoskeletal orthopedic surgeries for athletes specifically. There's a lot of challenges that come in on what is my identity? Am I still an athlete? I kind of had to, I saw a lot of it from different perspective. And You can go into post-trauma, and then you can go to post-growth from these kind of events. And it's a lot of how you take it. And I can really feel it in my own surgeries and path to it. Like I had an Israeli national records. I was in Olympic teams. Like I did a lot of stuff. And this is a big impact on how you see your life. Is that how my life is going to keep going, or is there a really big change on it? There's big steps to take. And there's very little support in people understanding you as you go through this route. So I studied computer science and math. I was an engineer for many years. I worked at Microsoft. I worked at Amazon, a lot of those large corporations. I did security for digital goods for Amazon, so making sure that nobody steals Kindle books or MP3s or Audibles. And my husband worked at Children's Hospital in LA and was like, well, I do something that is potentially better, more important. He said it nicely-ish. So at some point, I left Amazon and joined Children's Hospital LA in the pediatric ICU. In the pediatric ICU, you see a lot of very complicated patients that have multiple comorbidities and conditions. They're the sickest of the sick within the hospital. You get moved to the PICU, the pediatric ICU, until you are stable enough and you go back to whatever department you came from, right? So it's the most difficult scenarios. And you see tons of medicine then. Super smart people, amazing clinicians all around, from the nurses to the doctors to the pharmacists, all top of notch. And then you see these patients recover and then fail to get an MRI on time because it's not set up this way, and fail to take their medication or not able to afford their medication. But we already paid for everything in the hospital. Like how is it breaking now? It's something that really, I couldn't sleep seeing this. Like I remember the first time I ran into U.S. healthcare and how it's done is I walked in the hospital. We lived in the dormitories. I walked in the hospital at like 8 in the evening and I saw 4 MRI machines sitting empty. At the same time, in Israel, they do 24/7. I went to Ashdod at like 2 a.m. to get an MRI. So how is it not utilized more? I look at the OECD data. An MRI machine in Israel does 9,000 scans a day, when an MRI machine in the U.S. is 3,000 scans a day, right? So a machine in the U.S., it's empty at least 67% of the time. We can do so much utilization. The price variation goes from $300 for an MRI to $4,000. So there's so much low-hanging fruit and things to fix. So really started from looking at access to care from firsthand, like sitting in the hospital, being in the hospital for many, many hours a day and seeing how the access is where things are broken. And then jumped into U.S. healthcare without thinking too much. I learned that U.S. healthcare is very, very complicated and there's a lot of forces from each way. And there's difference between how you build the product and who you sell it to and what incentives are pulled and who is paying whom. That needs to be really well understood when you want to create a product. If your product does really good for the world and really good for the patient, you really need to understand who is willing to pay for it, who is going to lose money because of it. There's a lot of forces in this field, but I find it fascinating. I find it fascinating to work through these complicated workflows and able to make a huge impact on people's lives. So worked at Children's Hospital LA for a couple of years, built a bedside decision support tool, so something to help clinician at the bedside and the PICU. Decided to leave when things are moving very slowly within medicine because it was more medical device and we had to go through FDA process. And I founded a company called Vim. I think you had one here on the podcast. And
I did.
So my co-founder and Asaf, both are phenomenal. And
great company.
Yeah, amazing. And grew a lot. I left after 6-7 years to take a little bit of a break. Moved back to Israel with my family, helped them live in Israel, which is sometimes a challenging task. Created a hyper-local logistics company, which looked at distributing goods into homes more similar to how we do it with packets in the cloud. So how do we do footprint by doing it by foot and having local storages along the city?
Very different.
Very different. I think climate tech and overall the ecology is very important. I feel less passionate about it, unfortunately. I want to be there. I think there's a lot of learning for me to do in order to get there, but it's very important as well for us. And went back to healthcare. We're seeing like my dad had an open heart surgery. He went home with 17 pages and he's like, what do I do? I'm like, I don't know. And we are educated and have access. And even with all these, it was very, very difficult. And I kept on seeing it over and over again and really wanted to challenge to take this challenge.
Incredible. No, so obviously entrepreneurship runs through your blood. And it sounds like you've had both personal and professional experiences that have led you to the convictions here. You have a phenomenal co-founder, Yoni. He's a force, to say the least. and I cherish the moment I got to spend with him and continue to spend with him. This is just really exciting. I think that you're really at the. I was personally very excited about Laguna. Just when I heard about it a while back, but now, thinking about the technological infrastructure transformations coupled with the acknowledgement, I think, from, I guess, society's side that we want to embrace these tools and that we understand, human decision-making processes need to be augmented and enhanced, but then being able to now be at that product layer and combining deep technology with these aspects, I think that's just ultra exciting. You've recently announced your Series A and the company's growing, and so I'm really excited to continue, being a fan from the side and cheering you on. So thank you so much for the great impact you're doing and for coming on here and sharing the story with me. This was really fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.